Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Here comes Jose Calderon. Inside LeBron. Nice feed in stride. Defending James. And LeBron puts it in at the buzzer. Smith inside. With an open lane. Can't get it. Here comes LeBron. And the lane parted. Crowded to James. Three. LeBron. Ball and down court perfectly. Thrown to Ingram for two. Inside. Ball finds Nance. Great cut. Here comes Smith. Three. LeBron muscling into Ingram. Here comes LeBron finding an open Crowder for the three. Rebounded by LeBron. He's got eight inside the line.
I just like the way we're playing ball as of late. You know, 16 of our last 17, but more importantly, it's the way we've been playing. Defensively, we're playing inspired ball. Offensively, moving the ball, sharing the ball, and everyone's in a great rhythm.
Jackson with the floater, and he banks it in. Reggie Jackson's leaner is good. Here's Tobias Harris off the Drummond screen. Jackson has daylight and strips the cord. Galloway squares up at Tolliver, known for his three-point shooting as well. He'll put up his first of the night and hit it. Long bomb is good by Galloway. And Avery Bradley, he'll get this one up and in. Avery Bradley. Up and in. Bradley around to Drummond for the flush. Pistons take it away. Galloway up the floor to Bradley for three. Reggie Bullock. Oh! Thanks to Galloway with three. With two. Good!
Call me Sandra Dre. I'm handing out gifts. Just trying to move the ball around. Try to get my teammates in the right position to score. Real fun the way we're playing. I think we took the pressure off ourselves. I think we played with a lot of pressure these past 2 weeks, you know, with the losses piling up. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves each and every night. No, it's like a must-win game each and every night and paying out the way one of the two, so I think we just played carefree and just played, had fun, just played. We had a great night.
I think they're a very good football team. You know, obviously they didn't have the start they wanted to the year, but they've been playing some really good football lately. You know, Joe's back, and, you know, the first time we played, we hadn't practiced much, hadn't done much. So they're playing much better on offense. Obviously, they've always been really good on defense. They're a good football team. John Dorsey has been outstanding. He's football 24/7, so I've enjoyed getting to know him more and spending time with him and talking about our football team and what we need to do. There's some good players in our locker room. The guys work extremely hard, and I think John's big focus is to try to get us more guys, you know, as we move forward on our football team that can best help us get this turn and become what we can become.
I do believe that he does play with a lot of poise. Oftentimes you'll find situations in third down where guys trying to press the issue, and sometimes, you know, they're going to take a chance here or there. There have been some pretty good quarterbacks that have done that from time to time. He does a nice job of taking care of the ball, I think, in any down and distance. Yeah, it's not as difficult as preparing for a Thursday game. So you got a little bit more time, but it just kind of skews things a little bit. You go to work a little bit harder work during the early part of the week, than one day earlier than usual. So you have to kind of stick a delicate balancing act between making certain that they get the reps that they need, but then also making certain you understand, too, that it's a day earlier, so therefore you want to make certain that you've gotten enough time to get their legs back, the energy back up, so they can perform properly as well.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Where we are. Salido Sports Leader. Yes, indeed. That's the mumbling translation. I had my jersey up over my mouth, you see. That's the way you do things now. I'm going to hear it again. All right. There we are. Salido Sports Leader. Welcome in. We are the Salido. That's LeBron James trying to keep secret his message to Lonzo Ball at the end of the game last night. I'll get into that in a moment. It is funny, though, you know, NFL coaches have their cards, their play sheets to cover their mouths with. Pitchers and catchers, when they get together on the mound, they cover their mouths with their mitts. You know, they speak into it so nobody can pick up what they're saying by lip reading. You know, a lot of people do that. But what are you going to do? All you can do if you're LeBron and trying to have a secret message or secret conversation with Lonzo Ball at the end of the last game last night you got to pull your jersey up over your mouth. Nobody can. It doesn't work very well on the radio, however, unfortunately. You can't hear it as much as you'd be able to. You would like to be able to. By the way, did I just hear Andre Drummond say to call him Santa Dre?
Yes, you did. Because he's handing out gifts.
That's one of my favorite lines of the year so far. Call me Santa Dre. Because he went out there and dropped 9 dimes on y'all in the Pistons' losing streak snapping 105-91 win over the Atlanta Hawks. Drummond, 12 points, 19 boards, and a career-high 9 dimes. How about it? Santa Dre giving gifts to everybody. That was kind of fun. Welcome to the extravaganza. In all seriousness, we do have a lot to talk about today and a lot of people to talk about it with coming up in about a little less than a half an hour. We are going to recap the winter meetings with Chris Cotillo. Does Major League Baseball work for SB Nation? And I'm looking forward to talking about what a deal that was just made. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it now, but how about the deal that the Philadelphia Phillies just gave former, now, according to multiple reports, catcher, third baseman, designated hitter, first baseman. I think that was the order of the positions that Carlos Santana played with the Cleveland Indians.
And then a couple games in the outfield, especially the World Series.
Oh, that's right. He did play a little bit out there. That's right. But remember, he was brought up through the system with the Dodgers, a catcher. And it was a pretty good one, too. Real strong arm. And the Indians, of course, when they acquired him in the Casey Blake trade, how about that for turning back the clock a little bit? That's how long Santana's been with the Indians, all the way back to Casey Blake. He was brought up as a catcher, and then they decided, you know, like a lot of great, well, they thought he was going to be a better hitter than I think he ever turned out to be. He's, you know, and we can debate this, and we'll talk about it with Chris Cotillo. But they thought he was going to be this, you know, phenomenal hitter. He was certainly one of the top hitting prospects in minor league baseball at the time when they got him from the Dodgers. They decided they didn't want him getting beaten up and have his career shortened by, you know, the brutal beating that so many catchers take, right?
And sure enough, if you remember, in his rookie season, he did suffer one of those brutal catcher injuries.
That's exactly right. He got trucked, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was in Fenway. I still remember watching that game thinking, oh, good, they just lost their prospect catcher for like a year. Great.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And it was only like 6 months, though.
And I'm trying to remember, wasn't there another one where he got trucked by Adam Dunn from the White Sox? All 6'7", 285 pounds, Adam Dunn just coming in and destroying
that's
him.
That's sounding a little familiar, too. Yeah, I'm not remembering as clearly as the one in Fenway.
I remembering that incorrectly. But anyway, so they put him to third base, which was a dream. Are you kidding me? You wish that would have worked. There's no way. He did not have the skill to do that. So then it was DHing, but of course, you know how it is. You had to find room for other guys who couldn't field, and so they put him at first, and that's where he found his niche. Last year and the last couple of years, he was a pretty good defensive first baseman.
Gold Glove finalist this past year.
That's what I'm saying, right? And so anyway, now he's gone. He's signing a $60 million 3-year deal, and a lot of people are calling this Tommy too.
I was just going to ask you that, Bob, because when I first saw this news maybe an hour ago, that was literally my first thought, no joke. I'm like, oh, good, it's Tommy all over again.
Jim Tommy part duh, as it were. So anyway, baseball talk coming up at about 3:35 with our man Chris Cotillo from SB Nation.
And MLBDailyDish.com.
And thank you, and MLBDailyDish.com. Appreciate that. And then coming up at 4:10-ish. We are going to talk with our man, another one from SB Nation. This is going to be Ryan Van Bibber on all things NFL. Lions, of course, have Saturday football. You just heard Jim Caldwell talking about the preparations for that against the Bears this time around. The Browns, whose turn is it to beat up the Browns this week?
Baltimore!
Oh, that's right. It would be the Baltimore Ravens. So they get to beat up on the Clowns, extending the losing streak to 14 this season. And let's see, and then we've got the game of the week, of course. Pittsburgh is taking on New England, so we'll get into all of those things with Ryan Van Bibber coming up at about 4:10. And a little high school basketball, how about that, as we are now a couple of weeks into the high school season, really kind of started right in the first weekend of December. And our man Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio, will join us for a little bit of basketball talk coming up at about 4:45 or so. But for now, let's talk about the jersey over the mouth of LeBron James. What did LeBron James tell Lonzo Ball after the game last night. He covered his mouth with his jersey, led Ball to doing the same thing, and then both of them decided when the media would ask after the game, what did you talk about? And LeBron said, none of y'all business. And Lonzo said, nothing. He didn't tell me anything. Obviously, that's not true. Obviously, he did have some advice and some words of wisdom to offer Lonzo Ball. Obviously, the highly touted rookie upon whom there are so many expectations, which is why I think LeBron probably is in the best position to give advice. Because when you are on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16, being designated King James, the chosen one, the way LeBron James was, so much was expected of him in his rookie year. LeBron, by the way, lived up to it and earned every single bit of the accolades. Lonzo Ball, not so much so far. So what advice would LeBron, who once came up with so much pressure, but it was just based on his own expectations as a player, not on his father pimping him out and trying to sell shoes off of him, whereas Lonzo Ball, you know, certainly does have that problem with LeVar Ball. What kind of advice would LeBron have for Lonzo Ball? Well, I think we actually know the answer to that now. We can speculate and have fun, but we don't have to because we know the answer now. But first, I thought Stephen A. This morning on First Take had a pretty good take on this.
As a young man, it was easy for LeBron James to feel the need to espouse some words of wisdom upon the kid. Clearly, LeBron was telling him to cover your mouth so they don't read your lips and see what we're saying to one another. That's why you block your mouth from, you know, being seen in that regard. And obviously, when you think about what you hear about Lonzo, he's a nice kid. Really, really good character guy. The pressure that's been placed on his shoulders is not by him at all. He has quietly gone about the business of trying to be the best that he can be, and his father's mouth has put him in a precarious position, which is, you know, basically provoked the ire of individuals like Charles Barkley and so many others. Even Kyle Kuzma went on Instagram and spoke against the big baller brand. Why on earth would he do that? You know why he did it? Because, you know, everybody suspects that it's having an unfair effect on the kid who's done nothing to bring such vitriol in his direction. So those are the kind of things, you know, that LeBron James was in his ear whispering about. Just do what he can to shut out the noise. Unfortunately, what LeBron can't do is advise him on how to deal with his dad, because LeBron's not qualified to do that. He's qualified to do almost everything else. I'm not sure he's qualified to do that now.
Yeah, and he's right about that. There's no question. I don't know that anybody would have an answer on how to deal with a LeVar Ball type father, because LeVar, he's one of a kind. I mean, really, I don't know that I've seen anybody quite like that in sports, particularly ever. But Kush, you said you had some ideas to what LeBron James might have been telling Lonzo Ball, and it might have something to do with, I don't know, teammating next year. Is that what you were suggesting?
I'm partly suggesting that in jest, but unfortunately, there has to be a little seriousness to it, because, you know, all the speculation, which as we know will continue through the rest of the season, feels like Cavs, Rockets, Lakers, mystery team is where we seem to be at. So my off the wall speculation of what LeBron said is, you better find a way to cool your dad, otherwise I'm not coming over there, because I am not dealing with that. That's my speculation. I base it on absolutely nothing whatsoever.
Well, guess what? There's no need to speculate, because we know now. We know exactly what was said. Literally within the last 40 minutes, we found out what was said. Audio discovered of the Thursday night post-game conversation between LeBron James and Lonzo Ball has been uncovered. And it reveals that what LeBron James told Lonzo Ball was to find his zone and to stay locked in, but to keep his words private and out of the media, because it should be white noise to you. How do we know all of this? A user on Reddit.com posted a transcript of the conversation heard through a foreign language feed of the Cavaliers 121-112 win. A foreign language broadcast microphone picked it up and they published it on Reddit. So that's how we know. You know, LeBron was trying to keep it secret, trying to keep the jersey up over the mouth. But, you know, obviously that just prevented the lip reading. He spoke clearly enough for a microphone of a foreign broadcast to pick it up. And they went ahead and published exactly what it was said. And guess what? ESPN confirmed the content of that conversation. James said, among other things, quote, find your zone and stay blanking locked in. And you can, the blanking word rhymes with duck. So you can figure that out. Stay blanking locked in. The media is going to ask you what I told you right now. Tell them nothing. Just be aggressive every single day. It's white noise to you. That's all it is, all right? Let's go. End quote. So it wasn't really a whole lot there. It wasn't a whole lot there. And by the way, Lonzo Ball listened to LeBron James' orders and followed them to the letter. Did he not? Because when
yeah,
you heard Lonzo
that's
Ball
really
after
what
the
he
game,
said. He certainly did. He certainly was followed after the game. If that's what
yeah.
was said,
he said literally, he didn't tell me anything. He didn't tell me nothing. He told me nothing. That's exactly what Lonzo said. The reporters were like, did he just tell you, you know, good luck? Or anything? He didn't tell me nothing. He didn't tell me anything. And that's exactly what LeBron James told him to do. Tell them nothing, he said. Just be aggressive every single day. So that's it. There's no nefarious motives here. He didn't whisper to him saying, bro, you got to call me in the offseason. We're going to do something together. Nothing like that. Just motivational. Find your zone. Stay locked in and let the rest of it be background noise or white noise, as it were. And you know what, Jim, without mentioning his father, because he didn't want to insult the kid, you know, by saying, you know, just shut your dad out, you know, don't listen to him and don't listen to anybody. He just said, you know, all of it, consider all of it white noise without identifying his dad as kind of being the noisiest of the white noise. Just find your zone, meaning on the court, stay effing locked in and don't listen to anything else. Just do what you do on the court and be aggressive every single day. Let the rest of it be white noise to you. That's all it is. So I think he is essentially saying, you know what, your dad is creating a zoo atmosphere. It's making other players target you. Other guys want to show you up and posterize you. They want to put huge stat lines up against you and shut you down.
We've seen that play out multiple times already this year.
We sure have. And I told it does no good to do the I told you so thing, but I said this. And by the way, you also saw the story yesterday that at some point last week, the Lakers called LaVar Ball in for a meeting and said, we have to talk. And the request from the Lakers, according to the Lakers and according to LaVar Ball, was that he tone it down a little bit because it's not helping his son. And it's not helping. The criticism of Luke Walton, the head coach, isn't helping the team, you know, tone it down a little bit. And then LaVar came out and said, yeah, I met with him. He met with Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka and said, yeah, I met with him. And you know what? I'm going to say whatever the blank I want to say. They just asked me if I would run it past them first. And I will. I'll let them know, he said. But I'm going to still say whatever I want to say because he knows what's best for Lonzo. Remember, nobody knows anything better than LaVar does, according to LaVar. So Lonzo Ball has unfortunately been asked to cash a lot of the checks that his big mouth father has written. And he has been targeted a lot. And I got to tell you two things. Number one, I feel bad for him. But number two, I saw this coming. Which is why I said all spring, if you recall, you know, even going into March Madness and watching him get bounced around by Markelle Fultz and everything else, or not no, Markelle Fultz, I should take that back, De'Aaron Fox, I said, look, if I was a GM with one of those top picks, I would not draft Lonzo Ball. I don't care if he looks like the second coming of Jason Kidd, which, by the way, he isn't. I don't care if he is, you know, the next great, ball handler and passing wizard and everything else. I don't care. I would not bring him around because he is going to be a franchise distraction that's going to cause problems, not through any fault of his own, but through the fault of his father, who will not stop criticizing the NBA coach any more than he didn't stop criticizing Steve Alford at UCLA and the Chino Hills coach that he got fired at high school. I said, there's no way you want that. And what I also said was that Lonzo Ball, by continuing to accept it and not telling dad, shut up for a while, you're hurting me, you're making everybody hate me, you know, he's giving kind of his passive, agreement to his dad's methods, you know, his passive assent to all of this, consent for all of this. And sure enough, that's what the Lakers are finding out. We're quarter way into the season. They're already having to call LaVar Ball in, tell him to shut up a little bit because it's not helping things. His son is continuing to get hurt by this. So my end, you know, result of all of this is, for the second day in a row, I have to compliment LeBron James, even though I'm not a massive LeBron James fan. Yesterday, I complimented him for the season he's having. Could very well be the MVP based on what he's done through 27 games. And it is, by the way, statistically speaking, one of his very best seasons ever, shooting a career high in field goal percentage, career high in 3-point percentage, an increase, not a career high, but an increase free throw percentage over the last couple of years. 28.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, 8.5 assists. Yeah. He's having that kind of a season. And now today, I must say, because I'm always honest with you, I don't always have to be right, and maybe I'm not, but I'm always honest with you about things I like and I don't like, and I don't really like LeBron. But this was nice. This was the right thing. He recognized everything that I described about LeVar Ball. He recognized how other players in the league were targeting Lonzo and trying to specifically embarrass him just to shut his dad up. And he reached out to the kid in a manner he did not have to. You know, Lonzo Ball grew up with LeBron James posters on his wall. LeBron's been in this league 15 years. That means starting when Lonzo Ball was 4. Isn't Lonzo 19? I think he's 19.
I think so, yeah.
So Lonzo was 4 when LeBron debuted as a rookie in 2003. So think about that for a minute, what it means to him to have LeBron James, the best player in the world, come up to him and encourage him and telling him, block all the rest of that out. Find a zone and stay locked into it. Don't tell the media what I'm talking about right now, but just understand this. It's all white noise to you. That's all it is. Just let the white noise go. Don't soak it in. Don't absorb it. Don't process it. Don't try to make sense of it. Don't fight it. Don't argue with it on social media. Don't be a part of your dad's games. Just lock in and be aggressive every single day. That's great advice from LeBron James to Lonzo Ball, and I give him much, much respect for that, Kush.
Yeah, I mean, based on the reports that are coming out, if that's what was said, then I tip my cap to LeBron. That's actually very, very good advice, and nothing nefarious that people could have fun speculation for the next 2 weeks about through the holidays.
It kills a good half hour of radio, though.
Darn it, right, it does.
We could have been thinking about it, speculating what you think he told him, because he covered his mouth to stop the lip reading, but he didn't realize there was a hot mic around from a foreign broadcast, and they published it, so... there it is. And by the way, like I said, Lonzo Ball did exactly what LeBron said to do. He said, don't tell them anything. Tell them nothing. And Ball was asked repeatedly, what did LeBron tell you? And he said, he didn't tell me anything. I mean, to the words. Ball, by the way, for his part, had 13 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds. So nearly a triple-double, but it's one of those, well, how effective was he really when you get a triple-double if you're 5 for 11 and you're only scoring 13 points? Still not shooting the ball very well. LeBron James, by the way, 25, 12, and 12, tying Larry Bird now for sixth place on the all-time triple-doubles list. So congratulations to LeBron. By the way, that should be pointed out. LeBron did that in his 15th season. Larry Bird, I think, only played 13 seasons, if I'm not mistaken. His career cut tragically short due to that back injury that stopped him from putting up some really incredible all-time numbers. In case you can't tell, that yes, I am a Larry Bird fan. Which is ironic, because I've only become a Larry Bird fan in my older age. Back in the 80s, when the battle was Showtime Lakers versus Bird Celtics, I was all Magic, man. I was all about Magic and Byron and Kareem and Worthy, and I rooted for the Lakers every time they played the Celtics. I hated McHale. I hated Ainge. I hated Bird. But it's only in my old age, and I look back with the analysis of not being a fanboy and the, you know, mesmerized by the wizardry of Magic Johnson, that I look back and realize what an amazing NBA player that Larry Bird actually was. All right, since we're doing basketball and we're going to pivot after the bottom of the hour local sports center to baseball, I think we should, I think our wild stats should stay in the form of basketball. Kush, let's hear it.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Lonzo Ball last night played his first game against LeBron and the Cavaliers and did okay, as I mentioned. He had 13, 11, and 8 on 5 for 11 shooting. Kind of brings back, what about LeBron James' first time playing against a legend that he grew up with his posters of on his wall? That would be Kobe Bryant. It was January of 2004 when rookie LeBron played his first game against Kobe and the Lakers. And relative to LeBron James' standards, it wasn't that great of a performance. Back on that day in 2004, LeBron had 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 7 assists on 6 for 20 shooting. Not too terribly different than what Lonzo Ball just did against him. So there you go. Buffalo Wild Wings, wild stat of the day. Bottom of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. Then we're going to talk baseball, winter meetings. The Indians have lost one of their reigning players in longest serving players, maybe a better way to say that, in Carlos Santana. What else happened at the winter meetings? Chris Cotilla, MLBDailyDish.com, joins us next.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Right back indeed. It's 3:41. Thanks for being with us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, shifting gears from the NBA into Major League Baseball. We're kind of covering the gamut today because coming up at about 4:10, don't forget, we have got our man Ryan Van Bibber from SB Nation. He's the NFL editor there, and we'll be talking to him about all of the big games this weekend. Of course, tomorrow it is Lions and Bears. The Browns continue their run to immortality in the worst kind of way. We'll talk about that. And, of course, the big game between winning teams is the Steelers and the Patriots. So all of that will be coming up with Ryan Van Bibber after 4 o'clock, about 4:10-ish. And then high school basketball coming up also at about 4:45. But now let's talk about the winter meetings. Now that they have concluded, a lot of player movement, a lot of rumored player movement as well. And joining us now to break it all down, Chris Cotillo joins us from MLBDailyDish.com. Hey, Chris, how the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're great. Thanks for spending some time in Toledo with us. We've got a lot of important things to discuss, and we look for your analysis. And, of course, the breaking story, literally right before we came on after 2 o'clock, we found out that the Indians are losing one of their longest service players in Carlos Santana. It's hard to believe. This is how long Santana has been an Indian. You probably recall this. Let's put you to the test. He was traded from the Dodgers to the Indians in return for what primary Indians player? Do you recall?
I am actually not sure on that one.
Indians fans will remember this. Casey Blake was the primary piece that was moved to the Dodgers way back when the Indians acquired hot-hitting, catching, and prospect Carlos Santana at the time. And
to be fair, I was 12, so
I told you it was a long time ago, didn't I? So
yeah.
He's been a fixture with the Indians, obviously, for many years now, and now that comes to an end as he decides to take a $60 million 3-year deal from the Phillies. Surprised by this move, and what kind of an impact do you think it has on both clubs?
Yeah, I think, obviously, it's an offer where they're paying a lot more than the Indians, I think, are willing to go. I think the last reports we saw out of Cleveland were that the Indians are willing to offer him about 3 years, $36 million as an extension toward the end of the year. They probably got that up to, somewhere in the 3-year, $48 million range, if I were to guess on how high they go, and that's obviously a lot less than 3 years and $60 million. Honestly, the Phillies could sign anybody they wanted. They have so much money available right now, just because the only guy they have locked up long-term is Odubel Herrera on a $30 million extension for a few years. Everyone else, all their guys are pre-arb guys, and they traded a guy in Freddie Galvis today that was their longest-tenured member. Now their longest-tenured guy is Cesar Hernandez, who's been there, and made his debut in 13, so he's only been there for a few years. They really only have a few guys going through arbitration. They've made some free agent signings, Tommy Hunter, Pat Neshek, and now a big move, obviously, in getting, Carlos Santana. I think that's the first in a line of big moves for the Phillies. Obviously, tough for the Indians. They have some options, obviously, in Encarnacion. Gave them some flexibility last year. But, if you want a first base guy, I think, there's a lot of options out there, whether that is Mike Napoli, Matt Adams, who's a guy that has been linked to the Indians already. Obviously, they're probably not going to play in the Hosmer market, but Logan Morrison, and just there's tons of guys out there. So Santana hurts because he's been there for so long. He's been a fixture and a guy who's been there, obviously, for 10 years, I guess, in that organization. It's tough to lose a guy like that, but at the end of the day, it's a good market if you want to replace him.
Well, actually, he came in 2010. That's when he came up, I should say. He was traded again. He was still a prospect, but considered to be like the best-hitting prospect in AAA anywhere at the time he got came over from the Dodgers. And it's with that backdrop I have, I think about this as we watched him come up. In a strange way, while he was a fixture, I never felt like he produced at the level that, he was projected to. I mean, he had some nice years. Two times he hit 27 home runs. He had 34 of them in 2016, by far his highest production. But his batting average never got consistently up over 250 or 260. 231, 231, 259, 259, 252, 239. This is a guy who was supposed to be for average and power and came to be known more, at least, and I'm a critical guy, I guess, came to be known more for, well, his on-base percentage because he walked a lot. He's got a great eye at the plate, which is fine, and that's why they started having him bat a little bit of leadoff, you know, even this past year. But not when you're supposed to be one of the number producers in the middle of the lineup. You know, it's not all about just getting on base and walking. You're supposed to be the guy who drives guys in after they do that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's what first base is supposed to be, you know, one of your best offensive positions. Obviously, you know, a lot of home runs, like 175 home runs over the time he's been there. But that average has kind of, you know, not been great in comparison to some other guys in the league. I think, you know, the OBP obviously helps, and a lot of teams value that highly. But, you know, a guy who I think, you know, a lot of these top prospects, unless they're absolute superstars, are disappointments. And I always think of, when I think of that, I always think of the Nationals. And I think people, you know, probably think of Steven Strasburg as a disappointment because of all the hype. He's been great, a Cy Young contender, a Cy Young finalist this year. But people are like, oh, you know, he's not all he could be. And that's the problem with how much we hype the prospects up nowadays, that you have a guy in Santana who's been, you know, worth 25 WAR over 8 years. It's not a fantastic number, but a very solid player. You know, we remembered as a very good Indian, helped him get to a World Series in 2016 and be a really good club last year. You know, I think, you know, a good contributor, someone they'll definitely miss, but yeah, not a superstar. You know, I think Kipnis trade is probably coming down the pipe for Cleveland at some point. That's going to be another guy that's been there for a while, you know, who they had made a long-term commitment, so to speak, to, at a previous time. And, you know, moving on from those guys as the new kind of core steps up with Lindor and Ramirez and those types of guys, that's all part of how, you know, organizations move on. So it's tough to lose those guys, even, you know, if you do consider them to be a little bit of a disappointment compared to what the hype was when they were prospects.
Yeah, just two of his 7 years with the Indians, did he have 100 RBIs or more? And that's something I think they expected more of. Jim Cushman's got a follow-up here, Jimmy.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple names ago, a few minutes ago, Chris, like Logan Morrison and Hosmer, and I suppose some of them, probably not Hosmer, are possibilities, but a lot of us around here have also been hearing grumblings that they might do internal things, like put Brantley there maybe when he comes back. I've been reading stuff in the last couple of days, though. Tito apparently not a fan of it. Maybe move Kipnis there. Do you see them going external or staying internal to try to fill this hole? Because I think we'd all agree they don't want Edwin Encarnacion to necessarily be the everyday first baseman.
Yeah, you know, I think you're talking about a market where there's a lot of needs, there's a lot of teams. That's why, you know, I made a list today of who was in on Carlos Santana at different times during this process. The Rockies, the Padres, the Rangers, the Red Sox, Mariners, Angels, and Mets, all looking for first baseman. That shows you a lot. The Rays are probably looking for one, too. You have a lot of guys available. Matt Adams is a really good fit, like I mentioned, I think could work. Yonder Alonso's out there, Lucas Duda, you know, Adam Lynn, Mitch Moreland, Logan Morrison, those types of guys are all available, and that's not even in the Hosmer realm. Mark Reynolds, another guy who probably will re-sign with Cleveland, but you just have a lot of guys out there. You know, you're probably going to be able to get one of them for cheap just to add some, you know, some certainty for a guy that's played first base before, demand that position. They do have flexibility. They do have guys that can move around. They have a lot of guys that have shifted positions over the years, and obviously not necessarily places for Kipnis and Brantley that you'd necessarily expect with the emergence of some other guys. But, you know, for me, I like signing that proven guy at least kind of as a depth option or a platoon or something like that. And you have tons of guys in their, you know, early to mid-30s that can really fit that role if you want to make a signing.
We are talking MLB winter meetings and a lot of player movement that is going on now. Chris Cotillo, MLBDailyDish.com. Make sure you read him there. Chris, couple more quick ones on the Indians because they were active in the wrong way, I suppose, as they lost a couple of key members of their bullpen, both Brian Shaw and Joe Smith. That's a hole that's going to be tough to fill. This has been one of the strengths of this team over the last 2 years, the World Series team in 2016 and the division champion team this past season, even though they lost in the postseason. How much does that impact them, and what are some of the answers?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were looking at Joe Smith as mostly a rental when they got him. At the trade deadline, Brian Shaw is a guy who, you know, just, pitched really well for them and was able to secure a $27 million deal in the open market. You can't fault the guy for leaving for that.
No.
Colorado needs to overpay, pitchers, period, to pitch out there. They did that with Shaw. They did that with McGee, and I'm sure they'll do it again with Greg Hall next week. We've seen them do it with Boone Logan in the past and, you know, Michael Dunn last year, just to name a couple random lefty relievers, I think. With Cleveland, obviously those things hurt, but you're looking at a market where you have to pay $9 million a year to get these starters, and you're not going to get, or to get these relievers, excuse me, you're not going to get them on one-year deals or two- or three-year deals. You know, teams, you know, some teams are just going to say, let's roll with what we have, maybe, you know, in the bullpen and see if we can have some minor league arms that are going to be cost-effective so we can dedicate resources elsewhere. You know, I think we've seen like 15 relievers signed. They've almost all been multi-year deals. You know, everybody's getting 2 years and guarantees of $18 million and $17 million, $27 million. I think a lot of some teams are just like, wow, that's crazy. I've had guys representing starters, you know, guys who have been proven major league starters for a while, which apparently, you know, what you think is the market inefficiency, the guys that are getting paid say to me, I really should have converted my guy to be a middle reliever. He really would have gotten paid then. So we're kind of seeing that shift, I think, for the Indians. You know, not necessarily the names that you've expected, but you still have Cody Allen and Andrew Miller at the back end of that bullpen. That's not a bad place to start.
Chris Cotella joining us from MLBDailyDish.com. Chris, let's move over to the Tigers briefly. Jim?
A couple of days ago, amongst part of the winter meetings, Tigers made what I speculate anyway, and please correct me if I may be wrong here, their last veteran sell-off, sending Ian Kinsler to the Angels for a couple of prospects. The reason, Chris, I'm speculating is that the three biggest veteran contracts they still have are Miguel Cabrera, Jordan Zimmermann, and the 1 year left on Victor Martinez. And for better or worse, I think they're keeping all three. But with Kinsler now out the door, are we done Tigers-wise with the sell mode, and it's now truly about the kids at this point?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think it's obviously, I think when you commit to tearing it down, there's already a trade. They've already traded Martinez and Upton and Verlander, Justin Wilson, Avila, and now obviously Kinsler this week. I say just go all the way. If you can find takers and sell money, I think, or get people to pick up some salary, I think if they can find a suitor for Jordan Zimmermann, I think they'd really love to do that, obviously. Victor Martinez is a guy who, obviously, on kind of the end of his career, potentially there. And Jose Iglesias is another guy they could trade. Castellanos, I don't think we can rule out either. So, you know, those guys, and obviously the rotation is probably just about set with those younger guys, unless Zimmermann is traded out of the bullpen. You know, there's a bunch of younger guys there too. So you've seen a lot of turnover already, but if they can find a taker for Iglesias or Zimmermann, Martinez, I think they would be willing. But Kinsler was really the last guy who was for sure going to be sent out.
Chris, every baseball analyst has an opinion on the Marlins and Yankees deal. First of all, do you believe Jeter did anything wrong here, or is he just bad at the job and just did not get enough back for a guy that he had to trade? Or did he do something nefarious where he gave his, you know, favorite team and his lifelong team a big break when they gave him Giancarlo Stanton? And secondly, from the Yankees side, putting this thing together the way that they are, is it good for baseball to have kind of a Golden State Warriors feel to their batting order when you have guys like Sanchez and Judge leading into Stanton and all of the pitches they're going to get because of the protection from one another? Is it good for baseball, and do you think they're done, or are they still going to be players between now and next year at some point, or the end of next year in the Manny Machado sweepstakes?
I think, you know, those narratives of the collusion thing with Jeter and which is kind of what you were inferring, and then, you know, the Golden State Warriors super team thing, I think those are narratives that were throughout the winter meetings, but I actually, you know, give Derek Jeter a little bit more credit than that. I think, obviously, you know, in basketball, five guys on the court at the same time, one guy, two or three guys can dominate the show, as we've seen. You have three good players and me and my sister out there, and you might be able to win a world championship in the NBA. And when you're talking about, you know, baseball, it's a bunch of individual battles and nothing is guaranteed. I think Brian Cashman called the Red Sox the Golden State Warriors of the MLB a year ago, and the Yankees ended up going farther than the Red Sox. So anything could happen over the course of 162 games and, you know, all the individual matchups that happened during that. I will say, you know, with the Jeter Stanton thing, they were kind of backed into a corner. He had to shed that salary. He had to. That, because they are so deeply in debt, and that was the best way to do it. And it's horrible for Marlins fans because they're so used to that. They see Miguel Cabrera and Willis, and then, you know, all the guys a few years later, Reyes and Burley and Heath Bell and that wave, and even, you know, over the last few years, some more sell-offs, and it hurts to lose all the stars. you know, I think that whole organization's direction was changed by Jose Fernandez's tragic boat accident and his death. And, you know, I think Jeffrey Loria selling the team, people had hope that Jeter would come in and be different. But he was dealt a really tough hand. When you come in, you know, when the ownership of business changes in the real world, it's, you know, not usually because the business is doing great and they want to stay there. It's, you know, it's Loria realizing, all right, this is horrible, and I've done enough damage, and now I need to pass this along. So they weren't in a good place. Jeter had to come in. And then he made two good deals. He made deals with the Giants and the Cardinals. Those were his top choices. And he said to Derek Jeter, according to Stanton's agent, Jeter said to Stanton, you are going to the Giants or the Cardinals. You pick, or you can meet with either club, and if you don't, you're a Marlin for life. Which is kind of a threat, because no one really wants to be a Marlin for life, especially in the current state they're in. And Jeter met with both teams out of respect, saw the organizations and how they worked, and decided, I'm not doing either, called their bluff, and what are they going to do, keep that $300 million contract when they have no money to pay it? And they really have to hamstring their organization for 10 more years. Jeter knew that that wasn't a possibility, said, no, I'm not going to either, but here are the teams I'll go to, the Cubs, the Astros, the Dodgers, his hometown team, and then the Yankees. And once they called that bluff and they had to, you know, work out a deal with one of those four clubs, Yankees came calling. Obviously, I think the ease of communication is a lot easier with Jeter and Brian Cashman than it would be with, say, Jeter and Andrew Friedman or Jeff Luhnow, or especially Theo Epstein, and they were able to get a deal done. So in terms of that, I don't, you know, think it's as nefarious as it looks. And obviously, you know, I joked even that Jeter's going to win another World Series MVP, you know, for the Yankees because Stanton's going to lead them this year. And, you know, people, especially around here in Boston, get mad at that on Twitter. But no, I don't think they're done either. I think they're going to go out and try to get Gerrit Cole, and they're going to be big players on Machado probably next year, if not right now, as the Orioles shop him. So that's kind of my take on all that stuff. I really don't think it's as bad as it looks.
And if they do go for Machado, does that mean they will not be suitors for Bryce Harper when he comes up?
Yeah, I don't think we can count them out on anything. I think the Stanton thing severely lessens
the
chance.
There's got to be a limit, though, doesn't there? I mean, you cannot tell me somebody can actually send out a lineup that includes Sanchez and Judge and Stanton and Harper and Machado all at the same time, not to mention Gregorius and the rest of the holdovers they have. There's got to be a limit, doesn't there?
I'm saying that they're going to finagle ways to do what they think is best for the team. And I don't think all those guys are going to be there at the same time, but, you know, I wouldn't, because they're the Yankees, count them out on, you know, Harper or Machado right now, just because of they seem to not really care about the luxury tax. I will say they were the favorites for Harper. That's significantly less than now that Stanton's there. I think it kind of increases the chances that Harper goes to the Cubs or the Dodgers or a team like that. So we'll see. Obviously, in a year, Harper's, you know, probably not going to stay in Washington, but doesn't look like, you know, at this point, the Yankees are the favorite anymore.
Well, Chris, really good stuff. A lot of crazy things happening. And, boy, if those kind of things happen, it gets even worse. But thank you so much for the great analysis. Chris Cotella, follow him at MLBDailyDish.com. Read his work there. Bookmark that in your browser. It's always a great read. Chris, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. We're coming up on 4 o'clock. You know what that means. We got a top-of-the-hour Sports Center coming your way. Following that, we're going to get into the NFL. Big, big weekend of matchups. We're going to talk Lions. We're going to talk Browns. We're going to talk MVPs. We're going to talk about much, much more as well. Our friend Ryan Van Bibber from SB Nation, NFL editor there, will join us. And a little high school basketball talk coming up next hour as well at about 4:45 with Bill Clark, along with Jim Cushlin, as we continue the extravaganza on this Friday afternoon. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Here comes Jose Calderon. Inside LeBron. Nice feed in stride. Defending James. And LeBron puts it in at the buzzer. Smith inside. With an open lane. Can't get it. Here comes LeBron. And the lane parted. Crowded to James. Three. LeBron. Ball and down court perfectly. Thrown to Ingram for two. Side ball finds Nance. Great cut. Here comes Smith. Three. LeBron muscling into Ingram. Here comes LeBron finding an open Crowder for the three. Rebounded by LeBron. He's got eight inside the line.
I just like the way we're playing ball as of late. You know, 16 of our last 17, but more importantly, it's the way we've been playing. Defensively, we're playing inspired ball. Offensively, moving the ball, sharing the ball, and everyone's in a great rhythm.
Jackson with the floater, and he banks it in. Reggie Jackson's leaner is good. Here's Tobias Harris off the Drummond screen. Jackson has daylight and strips the cord. Galloway squares up at Tolliver, known for his three-point shooting as well. He'll put up his first of the night and hit it. Long bomb is good by Galloway. And Avery Bradley, he'll get this one up and in. Avery Bradley. Up and in. Bradley around to Drummond for the flush. Pistons take it away. Galloway up the floor to Bradley for three. Reggie Bullock. Oh! Thanks to Galloway with three. With two. Good!
Call me Sandra Dre. I'm handing out gifts. Just trying to move the ball around, try to get my teammates in the right position to score. Real fun to fund the way we're playing. I think we took the pressure off ourselves. I think we played with a lot of pressure these past 2 weeks, you know, with the losses piling up. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves each and every night. You know, it's like a must-win game each and every night and paying out the way one of the two. So I think we just played carefree and just played, had fun and just played. We had a great night.
I think they're a very good football team. You know, obviously they didn't have the start they wanted to the year, but they've been playing some really good football lately. You know, Joe's back, and, you know, the first time we played them, hadn't practiced much, hadn't done much. So they're playing much better on offense. Obviously, they've always been really good on defense. They're a good football team. John Dorsey has been outstanding. He's football 24/7, so I've enjoyed getting to know him more and spending time with him and talking about our football team and what we need to do. There's some good players in our locker room. The guys work extremely hard, and I think John's big focus is to try to get us more guys, you know, as we move forward on our football team that can best help us get this turn and become what we can become.
I do believe that he does play with a lot of poise. Oftentimes you'll find situations in third down where guys are trying to press the issue, and sometimes, you know, they're going to take a chance here or there. There's been some pretty good quarterbacks that have done that from time to time. He does a nice job of taking care of the ball, I think, any down and distance. Yeah, it's not as difficult as preparing for a Thursday game. So you got a little bit more time, but it just, that kind of skews things a little bit. You go to work, a little bit harder work during the early part of the week, than one day earlier than usual. So you have to kind of sit a delicate balancing act between making certain that they get the reps that they need, but then also making certain you understand, too, that it's a day earlier, so therefore you want to make certain that you've gotten enough time to get their legs back, the energy back up, to so they can perform properly as well.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway right here on the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are Toledo Sports Leader. And we begin hour number two where we promised we would, and that is on the NFL. A lot of big games and a lot of stories, really, too, outside of the actual contest coming up this weekend, including Saturday games, by the way, now. And we'll talk about the Lions in their matchup with the Bears, which will be tomorrow. But a ton of NFL news to get to. And joining us now to break it all down is Ryan Van Bibber. He's an NFL editor with the good folks at SBNation.com. Ryan, good to have you back here in Toledo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We are outstanding. Thanks for asking. This is such a great time of the year. There's 3 weeks of regular season football left. Playoff positioning is being fought for. Playoff berths are being won. And in fact, let's start there on that tone, talking about playoff positioning and playoff berths. Aaron Rodgers returns now for the Packers in a position to really impact many, many teams in the NFC. I was kind of just counting everybody who played Green Bay as a prospective win, as long as Brett Hundley. And not to be a jerk to Brett Hundley, just he's not Aaron Rodgers. It's not really what he is or isn't. It's just that he's not Rodgers. Anyway, for example, the Lions have the Bears, they have Cincinnati, and they had Green Bay. And I said those should be three wins, to be quite honest with you, to end the season, because the Bears are terrible, the Bengals are terrible, and Green Bay has Brett Hundley. But now that changes everything. So, Ryan, let's start there. What impact will Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know if he's 100% either, so we have to consider that. So based on, you know, what we don't know and don't know about Aaron Rodgers, what will be his impact on the NFC playoff race in the final 3 weeks?
Just his presence alone, I think, has an impact. I mean, just to know that he's starting for the Packers and what he can do for the Packers, whether it's sort of the improvisational stuff he can do outside of the pocket, you know, how a defensive coordinator has to start to plan his week around that. And, you know, I haven't seen specifics out of Carolina, but I'm sure that the defensive staff down there has probably spent most of the week, even before it was announced on Wednesday, kind of planning to have Rodgers as their opponent this week as opposed to Hundley. So, you know, I think that's it's a threat. I mean, you know, we've seen what the Packers are without Rodgers and what they are with Rodgers, and they're a threat anytime they have Rodgers. And the fact that they control their own destiny now, I mean, that they have to win out these next three games to have a shot at the playoffs, it's I think even that much more important. I mean, he's not 100%, like you said. He's, I think he's closer to 80%, they said, but he is recovered enough, you know, to get in there and play. And 80% of Aaron Rodgers is still better than, you know, 110% of most quarterbacks in the league. So, I mean, it's a serious issue for the Packers, or for anybody playing the Packers coming up now, because it's a much tougher team to defend and play against.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, and you're right, 80% of Aaron Rodgers better than 110% of most guys, including Brett Hundley. So we just have to point that out. That makes them more dangerous. I want to talk about Carson Wentz on the flip side now, another superstar quarterback going down rather than coming back. But before I do that, because we are in Toledo and we have a lot of Lions fans who listen and a lot of Browns fans who listen, so let's talk about the Lions and the Bears tomorrow. Again, it's something that a month ago, I just kind of predicted the Lions had a really good chance of winning out and solidifying a spot in the playoffs, talking about Tampa Bay, Chicago, Cincinnati, and Green Bay for lots of reasons. And in Chicago, or in the Chicago game, which will be at Ford Field, the reason was Mitch Trubisky. You know, here's a rookie quarterback who's being brought along very slowly, not being given a whole lot of the playbook to digest, not being asked to do a ton. It's just get some experience and learn this. But well, lo and behold, Mitch Trubisky in the last 2 weeks has become a player. You know, a rookie who's, you know, selection as high as he was is number one as a, or as a number first quarterback taken is a, you know, it threw a lot of people for a loop, especially because the Bears had just invested money in Glennon. And now here we are toward the end of his rookie season and back to back games. I think his average, his QB rating, average of the two games is 114. He's got accuracy. He's putting up points, and suddenly Mitch Trubisky is a little bit more of a threat than I thought. So how do you size up Lions and Bears at Ford Field tomorrow in Saturday football?
Well, I think the spread on that game is 4.5 points, which is I'd probably bet on the Bears for this one. I mean, the Bears, I know they're only 4-9, but they've been a tough out for those, you know, nine teams that have beaten them. And like you say, you know, the improvement of Mitch Trubisky these last two games, the Lions have a hard time defending stuff like that. I mean, you know, you look at Trubisky, he was able to do work with his legs last week. Again, sort of a trend we've seen, you know, much more success over the past couple seasons with these young quarterbacks coming into the league and the playbook being geared around their mobility as much as their arm. And, you know, that's tough to defend, and we haven't seen a lot of flexibility from the Lions on that front. So, it's probably more of a toss-up than I think a lot of people would have imagined going into this game. And the Lions have been a little disappointing. I mean, you go back to that game against the Ravens a couple weeks ago, the Vikings game on Thanksgiving, which, you know, they really did have a chance to win that one. So, and, you know, they had a tough time getting over the Bucks last week. So I think the Bears, the only thing that concerns me a little bit about the Bears is you've lost some of their power on defense. Obviously, Sharif Floyd's out, so that's, you know, you lose a pass rusher, and you need a pass rusher to get after Matt Stafford to beat the Lions. So, you know, that could be sort of an equalizing factor in that one.
Stafford, obviously, you know, had the bruised throwing hand, and there were some questions as to whether or not he would play last week. He did. Didn't play spectacularly, and neither did the Lions, but they got a tough victory in Tampa. Do you see this team making the playoffs, given the games that I just laid out for you there? They've got Chicago, Cincinnati, and Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers back, or is this just all playing out the string for Detroit?
I think they're going to be playing out the string this year. I mean, this is that's a tough road. I mean, like I said, the Bears game's tough enough as it is, and then to have to play if there are higher stakes on the line going in that Week 17 game against the Packers, that's, you know, not historically a situation where they've done really well in.
Yeah, I think that's true, and it's unfortunate because this, you know, for me, the season started out so strong for the Lions, and you just, you know, they were actually cracking top tens in some of the power rankings that you saw after about a month of football, but then they hit the skids in the middle of the season. They lost 4 out of 5, and since then it's just been kind of up and down, and they just don't have enough weapons, I think, to help assist Matthew Stafford, and also they've been missing some guys because of injuries too, particularly on the defensive side. So it's a season that started with a lot of promise that may indeed kind of end up being a little bit boring and playing out the string and not making the NFC playoffs. Which brings me to the other question. Oh, actually, hold on. Jim Cushion's got a question for you before I move on to Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. Jimmy, go ahead.
And following up on this real quick, with the Lions, should it turn into playing out the string regardless of what record they end up having? There's all been a lot of talk on the periphery this season with the Lions about Jim Caldwell's extension. You know, they kept it under wraps, announced it midseason even though they did it in August. Now we come to find out it's really only a one-year extension for 2018. I don't see them, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't see the Lions changing coaches just yet, but a failure to make the playoffs on top of how this quote-unquote extension has played out for him, is how probable is it that he's coaching the Detroit Lions, especially past next year?
It's a toss-up for me. I mean, I was thinking about this with somebody the other day. It's just, you know, to be in the situation where, I mean, they can still make the playoffs, but there are so many other factors. Not only do they have to win those games, you know, now they're in a situation where they have to count on the Seahawks and the Falcons and the Panthers all stumbling a little bit down the line, and now you have Aaron Rodgers coming back. I mean, the fact that they couldn't capitalize on the wild card race in a year where Aaron Rodgers spent most of the season on injured reserve, that's telling to me. I mean, I know that they have some roster limitations. I know that they've had injuries, but, you know, to start out as hot as they are and kind of stumble in and down the stretch like this, it doesn't bode well for me for his future. I mean, I hate to see teams just, you know, 86 a coach just because, they feel like it's time. But, you know, this is Caldwell's fourth year now. It's time to ask some hard questions.
You know, it really is. And I think those questions are being asked by a lot of Lions fans and even some Lions media in Detroit. What would your answer to those questions be, Ryan? Do you think this team is on the right track enough to say, let's go another year of Caldwell's vision and his style and his everything that has them where they are or where they aren't? Or do you think they should be one of the teams looking for, you know, for an upgrade in this offseason? How would you answer that question?
I would probably look for another one. I mean, I would probably find another head coach. I mean, I've never been a big Caldwell fan. I think that he's just not. I think in today's NFL, you need coaches that are willing to move outside of the things that they're comfortable with. They're willing to switch things up offensively, defensively, that are willing to bring in smart coordinators who, you know, ask the best out of their players. I mean, I think the best coaches in the NFL are the ones that design teams around the players that they have, and those are always the most successful ones. And I think that, you know, the Lions are hovering around that, you know, that line just above 500. They're a team that's, you know, a little bit a 500 team or better. I think that you need somebody else that can kind of kick them up to the next level now.
Are they getting, one more question on the Lions, are they getting enough from Matthew Stafford given all of the circumstances surrounding him, meaning they don't have much more than him, so the pressure is on him to deliver huge each and every week? You know, I said before, you know, he played pretty well against Tampa, but not spectacularly. And I say that, of course, because of the two interceptions. Otherwise, he would have had a very high quarterback rating. He was 36 of 44, great accuracy, 381 yards, but only one touchdown and two picks. So his QB rating was 91. And it almost seems like he's got to be better than that. He's got to be perfect to give them a chance to win. But then you also consider the fact that, well, they're paying him to pretty much be perfect. He's the highest paid football player in the history of the NFL as of right now. Are they getting enough from Matthew Stafford, in your opinion?
I think they have at times over the years. You know, the thing that bothers me the most with the Lions and Stafford is why here's this quarterback who's got a huge arm, and you've never been able to build an offense that uses a play-action pass consistently and successfully. I mean, there's no running game. Who's the threat to run when you play the Lions? And when you take that away from them, it makes Matthew Stafford's job that much harder to do. So, you know, they've got to do better by Matt Stafford before they can expect him to carry as much of the load as he does.
Let's move on to a couple of other quick ones on the NFC, and I do have some questions on the AFC side too, including the change in the front office of the Browns and also the biggest game of the year, probably in the AFC, if not the NFL, is the Steelers and the Patriots coming up on Sunday at 4:25. But since we're talking about the NFC playoff race, you know, it was widely assumed that the top seed is going to be the Philadelphia Eagles, and they're going to be the team to beat to go to the Super Bowl, because it's not just Carson Wentz. It's a very, very good, balanced offensive and defensive football team. But still, he was the straw that stirred the drink in his second year, and now he's done. Can Nick Foles be the guy to keep the train humming along on the tracks for them? Are they still the team to beat, or have they lost that that title now because of the injury to Carson?
Well, I think it does. It narrows the NFC race quite a lot because you have, I mean, the NFC was pretty tightly packed as it is, and you have the Vikings that are red hot, the Rams, the Saints, and all those NFC South teams that are, you know, bruising and battering each other on their way to winning that division. So it's not as easy for the Eagles now. And because, you know, without Foles, I mean, and without Wentz, you lose a big chapter of the playbook. I mean, Wentz does, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for it, but he does a lot of work outside the pocket, and that's great, but it also puts your quarterback at, you know, a higher risk for injury too. So, you know, that's probably a factor, I think, going back that the Eagles should have had a little bit more preparation for, a little bit more expectation when you have a quarterback working out of the pocket as much as he does, that, you know, there's a higher risk for injury. But I think with Foles, they still have a really good offensive line. They have a dynamic running game. They have a receiver. They're a good group of receivers. You have Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey, who are any quarterback's best friend. So I think that you can still get sort of that, you know, sort of like what the Vikings have done with Keenum in Minnesota. You've taken an average quarterback and given him the offensive weapons and the kind of protection that a quarterback needs, and you've been able to get, you know, significantly above average play for him. So if Foles can be at all consistent with his arm, I think the Eagles will be okay. I mean, they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs no matter what. So I think that they're not in as good a position as they would be with Wentz, but, you know, they're certainly not out of it.
We're talking to Ryan Van Bibber, NFL editor at SBNation.com, about some of the this weekend's NFL action. Lions not in a good place, according to Ryan. Let's switch gears and talk about the Browns and a little bit on the AFC, because, as I say, you know, here in Northwest Ohio, we got a lot of Browns and we got a lot of Lions fans. In fact, we got a lot of Steelers fans too, according to Kush. I still haven't met a ton of them, but he says there are a lot of Steelers fans here in Northwest Ohio. So a little over a week ago, almost 2 weeks ago, Sashi Brown is sent packing. And right after that, they announced that Hugh Jackson will be staying next season, despite 1-28. Despite, not that he was coach for all of them, he's just 1-28, but they, as an organization, are 4-46 over their last 50 football games, the single worst stretch in the history of the sport. Talking single bar face masks, talking leather helmets. Nobody has been this bad for this long. What is your take on the decision to keep Jackson while jettisoning Sashi Brown and hiring very experienced general manager John Dorsey?
Well, I like Dorsey. I mean, he has a track record with personnel, and I think that, you know, given the treasure chest of draft picks the Browns have, that's a good sign, you know, to bring in a guy like Dorsey who's had a pretty good track record of success with that. I was a little dubious that they kept Hugh Jackson. I mean, it's not that Hugh's a bad coach by any means, but it's just, you know, he's not great. I think that, you know, the Browns don't have the talent to be, you know, AFC champions or anything, but they're a better team than their record. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I think, you know, the obvious thing, the strike against Hugh Jackson this season has been the way he handled Kaiser. You know, he pulls him in one game, benches him, brings him back out, benches him again. I mean, that's not good for a young guy's development. So, I mean, I know that, you know, the Browns, there's some fatigue. You can only clean house so many times before it just kind of stays dirty. But, you know, I think maybe they needed to get a new guy in there. And I still wonder if Dorsey won't eventually bring in a coach that he's more comfortable working with.
But it would at least have to be after one more year, because they've already announced and guaranteed that Jackson is going to get another year. And of course, Dorsey, you know, kind of took some shots at Sashi Brown on the way out the door yesterday, saying, you know, that the last guy didn't make very many good draft picks, which means, you know, Hugh Jackson, once we get him the right kind of guys, is going to be the right guy as far as he is concerned. So, of course, he has to say that because, again, Jackson doesn't report to him in the traditional coach to the GM model. Haslam announced that Jackson will report to Haslam, that Dorsey will report to Haslam, that Paul DePodesta, who's still on board, will report to Haslam. So he is still kind of running the show, and Dorsey doesn't have a whole lot of choices here as far as dealing with Hugh Jackson as the coach right now.
You know, I think that's part of the problem. I mean, that doesn't seem like an efficient leadership structure to me. I mean, I think
it's a terrible structure. I totally agree. Go ahead.
I you create competition between those guys instead of, you know, a coach and GM should be, you know, independent, but also working pretty close together. I mean, you know, they're a coach has a player in mind, and the GM is the one that goes out and gets them. I mean, it's sort of, you saw that with Dorsey and Reed in Kansas City. So, you know, I don't like that structure. I don't think that works very well with teams that do it like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Do you have a thought on Kizer, Deshaun Kizer? Should he be given the chance to keep that job and get better players around him? As Dorsey has admitted, they did a lousy job of stocking the roster. He's got a very, very weak offensive line. He's running for his life most of the time. He's got the worst receiving core in football, although now it has been bolstered by Gordon's return. Does Kizer deserve to, another shot, or do they have to take a quarterback number one overall?
I mean, that's a tough call because, you expect a pretty tight turnaround. You had Dorsey, what he said, that he expects them to win the AFC North next season and nothing less will suffice. So, that's a pretty big ask for a guy like Kizer. Kizer has a lot of talent, but it was raw. We knew that coming in. I was really surprised that, they rolled with such a young group of quarterbacks this year to begin with. I mean, I thought this was – Kizer, to me, is the kind of guy that would benefit with a year on the bench, I think now they have to ask themselves – they have two top five draft picks right now. I mean, they've got to ask themselves if there's a quarterback in this draft that they feel like – can be the guy they want. I mean, this is, a decent enough year for quarterbacks. They have some options available to them. You also have, what's shaping up to be an interesting free agent market for quarterbacks. I mean, potentially Eli Manning. I don't see Eli Manning going to the Browns at his age, but you have players like Kirk Cousins that are available. I mean, there's a, this is an interesting time to be needing a quarterback. So I think they'll probably move on from Kizer. I hope that he still gets a shot because he is very talented. He just needs some coaching. He needs some work. He needs some time to learn it.
Does the signing of Dorsey as the GM, since you made me think of this when you said Eli Manning, does that preclude Peyton Manning from taking over as, king of all football operations, team president probably, maybe so that all of those guys who report to Haslam won't anymore, that they would report to Peyton? We all know there's been a flirtation there that's been rumored for the last month or so. Any room for that, or is that now a dead issue?
No, I think it's a dead issue. I mean, you look at the reason Dorsey was fired in Kansas City in the first place is because he's the guy that expects to be in charge. So that's, they could bring in Peyton Manning, but they might not, it might not work out very well to have, too many bosses in there.
Game of the week and maybe the game of the year is Pittsburgh and New England. This time it's in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, has an extraordinarily hard time winning in New England and Foxborough. We've seen that, especially in the postseason, including last year. Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh might be a little bit of a different story. Tom Brady, though, is 10-2 lifetime against the Steelers for whatever reason. And in my book, I think he's going to be really motivated, as are everybody, in Patriots uniforms because of their embarrassing loss down in Miami. Who wins in Pittsburgh? And, obviously that will have an impact on the postseason. If Pittsburgh loses, they go back into a tie for the best record with New England, and New England wins that tiebreaker because of the head-to-head, and back to Foxborough they go in the postseason.
Well, I picked the Patriots to win, and the deciding factor for me was the fact that Ryan Shazier is not playing. I mean, that's a huge presence for the Steelers, and I think that that's an easy thing for the Patriots, especially a team like the Patriots that does such a good job with game planning. They get Gronkowski back this week. You watch those guys like James White and Rex Burkhead. I think that's a group that can really take advantage of that Steelers defense without Shazier. You saw that you saw the weakness they had last week against the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens put a terrible offense, put up 13 points on them. Alex Collins had a career day because, largely I think because they did not have Shazier in the lineup. And I think that's the thing that Patriots can take advantage of. Now, I wouldn't rule out the Steelers winning by any means. I think if they're smart and they have a good game plan that revolves around giving Le'Veon Bell the ball as much as they possibly can, even if he's not getting 4 yards a carry right off the bat, if they stick with him, I think they'll have a good shot to beat the Patriots.
Ryan Van Bibber is our guest. He's the NFL editor for SB Nation. Last question. As we have 3 weeks to go, and so things can change. Carson Wentz cannot enhance his resume anymore because he's done. Tom Brady certainly can in these last 3 weeks, particularly Sunday against Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown is getting the most noise as far as a non-quarterback at potentially being the league MVP. Who wins it if you had to give it out right now, and who do you think is going to win it after 3 more weeks of football?
Well, I think Brady will probably get it. I mean, I sort of choke back a little bit when I have to say that, but I mean, I like the case that Antonio Brown has for that. I mean, I think a lot of that's going to depend on the game this week and how the season ends for them, if, you know, he has a legitimate shot. I mean, it stinks that the voters kind of have a bias for quarterbacks to begin with. So unless, you know, a guy does something really special, sort of like that, you know, a 2,100 rushing yard season, that sort of thing, it's 9 times out of 10 going to be a QB. But, you know, you look at the Saints too. If the Saints have a really good finish to the season, I think you have a case for Alvin Kamara. I mean, that's a dark horse candidate to be sure. But, you know, there are guys like that that have been a central factor in sort of the playoff races for some of these teams this year. Russell Wilson, if the Seahawks could keep winning, I think would have a case for it. You know, if you really want to get crazy, the Rams special teams have been an essential part of that team's success this year.
Yeah, you're right. You're getting crazy now. So that's.
I just, someday some special teams, some special teamer is going to win the MVP award.
No, I don't think so. But I tell you what, if Antonio Brown does again against New England what he did last week, you know, with what, 11 catches, 213 yards, and he continues to just, you know, put up crazy numbers for a team with the best record in football, which they would have if they win tomorrow, I think he's going to make it very, very hard for the voters to vote for a non-quarterback for the first time, or running back. Well, rephrase, to vote for a wide receiver as the MVP for the first time in history. No wideout has ever done it, including Jerry Rice. But his production is just off the charts, and if they end up having the best record, he will be an extraordinarily big reason why.
Yeah, it's time. I mean, he has a lockdown case for it.
He really does. Well, as of now, as we said, let's see. If he can continue to average double-digit catches in the next three games, then he could very well salt it away. But, you know, that's a big if, of course, because New England knows a thing or two about taking somebody's best player away from him.
Yeah.
Ryan Van Bibber, NFL editor at SB Nation. Ryan, it's always fun talking football with you. Keep up the great work at the website, and thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me today, guys.
You got it. Have a great one. There you go. That's Ryan Van Bibber, as I say, NFL editor. And also, he does their podcast at SBNation.com for the NFL. And always a good chat. All right, so we are a little bit past our 4:30 Sports Center, so we're going to get to our bottom of the hour local Sports Center. We'll come back, and I think we're going to go right to Bill Clark. How about that? Bill Clark, it's time to talk high school basketball right here on The Ticket. We do Bill every week, of course, during the NFL football season. Now we are into the hoops side of things, and we'll get an update on some of the local matchups, game that will be broadcast tonight, and much, much more. So Bill Clark talking with Jim Cushlin as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We are here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza, final edition and segment, I should say, of the week here on 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks so much to Ryan Van Bibber, SB Nation NFL editor, chatting football with him. And then, of course, Chris Cotillo last hour going over some of the recap of the winter meetings. Folks, a lot on the Indians since, of course, earlier today. Carlos Santana signing with the Philadelphia Phillies. So that's obviously a big move with some ramifications. But time to switch gears yet again. We've been kind of running the gamut today on all the various topics and things going on out there. And it's time to turn our attention to some high school basketball. We haven't done this in a couple of weeks, still in the early part of the season for a lot of the teams in the area. They'll last main Friday of the season for, until it takes a little break, sort of, depending on which school it is, of course, for the Christmas breaks coming up. And as we do with anything high school sports related here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, let's welcome in once again to the program the voice of high school sports here in the area, Bill Clark, back on the program with us. Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Cush. How are you?
Hey, we're doing pretty good, doing pretty good. As I mentioned, early season still in terms of where everybody is, only, you know, depending on who you are, a couple of games played, varying at this point. But some fascinating matchups, I feel, coming up on this Friday. And let's start in the track, the game you guys got tonight, a dandy of a game, St. Francis at Whitmer, 6:30, the coverage time for you and the crew, Bill, right here on 106.5 The Ticket. Whitmer coming in 3-0 right now. St. Francis 4-1. So both teams off to a good start.
Yeah, they're both playing pretty well. They're both 2-0 in the league. So that's kind of impressive to get things started. You like to try to get off on a good foot. Of course, last year St. Francis started 13-0 and then ran into a couple bumps, but still had a really good year. And Travis Lewis in his sixth year is really turned that thing around. They're playing very good basketball over at St. Francis. And Whitmer lost a lot of points from last year, probably around 32 points of production based on the seniors who left. But the cupboard is far from bare for Ryan Brown. He's got some skilled athletes. A couple of football players came over. Kevon Butler, who was a defensive end for the Whitmer Panthers, is doing a really nice job at the basketball court for the Panthers early in the season. So it should be an interesting ball game tonight. And of course, now the way the track plays, it's a home and home. So you know, St. Francis will travel over to Whitmer tonight, but then St. Francis will get them at home back on the 2nd of February. So hopefully you want to hold court if you're the Whitmer Panthers, and also kind of make a statement early in the season, because obviously it's going to be the first league loss for one of these teams tonight who comes up on the short end of the stick.
How strong is the top of the track right now? We've just been talking, obviously, Whitmer, St. Francis, your game tonight, but Lima Senior off to another decent start, and as is St. John's. Who out of those four really is the best team so far?
Well, I think right now you got to look at St. John's. I mean, we talked about this with Central Catholic and the football side of things, but, you know, St. John's, you know, if you're the king, you wear the crown until somebody knocks you off. Ed Heintzel's got some very good players coming back. They did lose some people, but as we always say with St. John's, they don't necessarily rebuild, they just reload. And when you build a program around Vincent Williams, that's a pretty good start. He's going to make All-State again. He could very well be the track player of the year again. He's going to go to Virginia Commonwealth next year to play basketball. But Ed Heintzel doing a great job, as always, with the kids that he has. And I think we mentioned this before, Cush, is the thing about Coach Heintzel is he doesn't force one system onto his team. He sees who he has on the floor, and then he builds the system around the talents of the kids that he has. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's been so successful. He's the fifth winningest coach in the history of high school basketball in the state of Ohio. St. Francis, as we mentioned, you know, the coaches picked them number two, and I don't think many people would argue with that. Whitmer was picked number three, which is kind of another factor in the game that we're going to have tonight on 106.5. You know, the coaches know these teams pretty well. I mean, they're obviously friendly away from the court are the coaches, but they know each other pretty well. And, you know, Central Catholic's getting a late start that they have been doing for several years because of the fact the football team played so long into the state tournament. So T.J. Hunt, they won their first game earlier this week against Maumee. So he's in his second season. He's looking to improve. Lima Senior got beat earlier this week by St. Francis down in Lima in a very good ball game. It's a one-point win for St. Francis. And when you can go down to Lima and beat them at home, that's a big win for the night. So they're playing pretty good basketball right now, and the track should be fun. But right now I think the coaches pick St. John's to win it, and I don't see anything in the early going to change that thought.
We're talking with Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, getting you a little primer for some of tonight and the early season high school basketball action that we've seen here on the Extravaganza. Let's go to the City League. That this is a league, of course, during football season, doesn't get a lot of love based on computer rankings. Very, very hard to make the playoffs. But basketball season is usually a totally different animal when you're talking the City League. And I'm looking at some of these teams, not off to great starts from some of them, especially some that have history like Rodgers, or some that are predicted to do some nice things this season from Wait. What are you seeing early on here in the City League?
Well, the coaches like Wait, and I don't see any reason to argue with that. Adam Rodriguez is now in his sixth year over at Wait. He's doing a really good job keeping those kids focused. Rodgers, they've had, I think it's been four coaches in 5 years. I mean, the turnover there has just been incredible. And Keaton Wyatt is now in his first season. His son plays on the team. He's got a couple transfers that won't be eligible till a little bit later on in the season because of the transfer rules. But Rodgers played St. John's earlier in the season and didn't look very good, to be honest with you. But Coach Wyatt said, you know, this is going to be a test for us. St. John's has some veteran kids. They've got some young kids playing on the varsity. We've got a lot of young kids. Christian Smith, who was an all-city player last year for Rodgers, is still the man over at Rodgers, but he's going to have to get some help from some younger players, and that should come around. The coaches like Rodgers to be number two in the league and then start. Last year, 4-6 in the league, 11-10 overall, and their coach is very young too. Matt Wortham is only in his second season. Joe Guerrero, who's bounced back and forth for a while with Bowser, he was with Clay, he was with Wade. Joe's a very good coach. This is his second year over at Bowser. Only six seasons of coaching for Mark Nabb at Woodward, and Rodney Martin is in his first year at Scott. So they've got a lot of young coaches over there. I mean, when you take a look at it, Mark Knapp at Woodward and Adam Rodriguez at Wake. They're both in their sixth year, and they are the deans of coaches in the City League. So when you have that kind of turnover, it's kind of tough to put a consistent program on the floor. But these coaches are working real hard. The kids are working real hard. And the City League will be fun. As you said, Kush, it's true. They don't get a lot of love in football just because of the schedules they have to play to try to get games outside of the league. But in basketball, you know, the City League is still pretty good. I mean, it's not the track by any stretch of the imagination. But they've got some very good players, and they'll have some fun before the season's over with. And we're looking forward to it because we're going to have the City League Final Four on 106.5 come February with the city championship that same week. So we'll get an up-close look at the best four in the City League when the playoffs roll around.
And that's always a fun little time, and we absolutely look forward to that down the line here on our high school basketball broadcast schedule. Some weekday games, Friday games, and some other games scatter around between now and February and then beyond when you get into the playoff time. One last question, you know, on the City League, too. You mentioned a lot of newer coaches. And, you know, right now the records, if you look them up, are don't really jump out at you the way you would think, especially for a league that I agree with you. It may not be the track, but basketball-wise, it's still a strong league. Is it fair or unfair to maybe call this a transition year for the league overall?
I don't know if it's necessarily a transition year. I think with the young coaches, I think it's going to be kind of exciting because they're all going to try to put their own stamp not only on their program, but try to put a footprint on the league play as well. So it'll be interesting how these young coaches respond. And a lot of times these young coaches were assistants at other schools before they get the head coaching job at the schools that they're at. So there's movement within the Toledo Public School system as far as the coaches go, even some movement with the kids. I mean, there's transfers back and forth. And a lot of these kids know each other. They play AAU ball together. They play pickup basketball together in the summer. So there's a lot of intensity in some of these rivalries because everybody wants to be on the top of the mountain when the City League playoffs come around, and you got four chances to get into that Final Four, and they beat each other up constantly, no doubt about that, because they play each other twice just like the track does. So you get a home and home, and the rivalries are still there, the intensity is still there. And it makes for pretty good basketball for those kids in the City League.
We're talking with Bill Clark, the high school play-by-play voice here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, here on the Extravaganza. I'm thinking over some high school basketball stuff. One last question, because I'm coming up against it, turning over to the Northern Lakes League right now. There's already seems to be some separation between the bottom and the top, and one of the matchups today, to me, is kind of fascinating. Anthony Wayne at Southview is a dandy. Those are two of the teams near to the top here in the early going. What are you seeing out of not just that matchup, but the City League in general? I mean, Northern Lakes League, I should say.
Well, Southview, the coaches think they're the best, and I think they've got more people coming back than anybody else, and I think that's going to be real interesting. Stan Joplin, obviously, is the coach. Everybody knows about him, so you got to look at Southview being real strong. Perrysburg's going to be around. Anthony Wayne, the coaches like them, number three, so there's going to be a lot of fun watching basketball in the NLL, but right now Southview is looking a little bit better than everybody else, but we'll see how that plays out.
Tonight it'll be St. Francis and Whitmer, 6:30 the coverage time. You'll hear that voice, Bill Clark, and the rest of the
7
crew.
O'clock.
7 o'clock. I'm sorry about that. 7 o'clock.
It's football. You're thinking football.
I must be. So, yeah, 7 o'clock, my bad, for the coverage time. St. Francis and Whitmer, Bill Clark and the crew have the call. And then, of course, stay tuned after that tonight, the high school basketball scoreboard show. Always appreciate the time, Bill. We'll catch up with you again down the line.
Look forward to it, Kush. Have a great weekend.
And that's going to wrap up this edition of the Extravaganza. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. It should be a fun one. We'll recap it all on Monday. Stick around, though. One more fun hour of sports coming at you. Mike Miller Drive Time coming up next. Stick around for that.
Oh, the traffic from the...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.